Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In the United States, we generate 254 million tons of trash a year. That breaks down to just over 4 pounds per person per day. 4 pounds a person a day. That is a lot of trash. Only 34% is recycled or composted, according to the EPA, and the other 66% goes to the landfill. The EPA estimates materials diverted from the landfill reduce the amount of carbon dioxide released in the environment, equating to taking 39 million cars off the road for an entire year. While recycling and composting has become more commonplace in the last 30 years, the UN says that humans are consuming resources and producing waste at a greater scale than ever before. Luckily, San Francisco has set a goal of achieving zero waste by the year 2020, meaning 100% of the city's waste would be diverted from the landfills. And there's a great documentary out, Racing to Zero, which shows us how the city is doing it, from glass recycling to electronic waste recycling. And we meet all of the incredible people that are working so hard to make this happen. And joining us to talk about how the city plans to achieve zero waste and whether we can do this nationwide is Christopher Beaver, director of Racing to Zero. Christopher has produced, written, and directed award-winning documentaries, including Secrets of the Bay. It's about San Francisco and the surrounding open countryside, and Tales of the San Joaquin, A River Journey. It's about San Francisco's Central Valley. And Christopher joins me in studio. Hi, Christopher. Great to have you back.
Thank you. It's very, very nice to be here. I love to talk trash.
So do I, thanks to your film. We're also joined by Diana Fuller. She produced Racing to Zero. Since 1985, Diana has been the director of the screenwriting program at the Community of Writers at Squaw Valley, and she serves on the board of the Artists in Residence program at Recology, and she also joins me in studio. Hi, Diana. Nice to see you.
Hi. Nice to see you, too. We love talking trash together and with you.
Well, I have to say thank you both for doing this documentary, because I thought that I was pretty good at recycling, but you've almost made me become addicted, to the point where when I go to friends' homes, I look in the trash and say, you know, you can compost that coffee cup, or thank the guys who pick up the garbage, who are usually being yelled at because they're blocking drivers. I mean, what has this been like for you? Because you've got amazing success stories in Hawaii. You're about to go to India to show this film. Just showing people why it's so important to recycle. Diana.
Well, each one of us has a sort of point of view on this, and all of them are shared. And I come in direct answer to the first part of your question, which starts with the word waste. And I think that's what this whole journey has taught me, is though we are all trying, because of the culture established in San Francisco, trying to understand all of the separation deals that are possible to make, it's hard because we get mixed. But the basic thing, seems to me, is the fact we're trying to cut down on the huge consumption, but more than anything, it's what we discard. It's what we don't use. And there's so much to talk about there. What do you think there, Christopher?
Well, I mean, as we talk about waste, it's a universal problem. I mean, the United States, country that we love to critique. I think that's one of the things that's good about the United States. We just love to critique our own society. But we do consume an incredible amount. What's amazing to me as somebody who made the film is, since we've completed the film, I've become a witness to how the film has had an impact in various places. And one of those was in Hawaii. In Hawaii, there was a proposal to build a $250 million incinerator next to the town of Hilo. The slogan is waste to energy, but in fact it should be energy is wasted and natural resources are wasted with an incinerator. Folks on Hawaii brought the film over and then flew us over. Actually, they bought one ticket for Diana, and Diana said, it's not going to be fun unless you come. And it was so grassroots over there that no one so much as really bought us a cup of coffee the whole time we were there. But they had film showings arranged in communities. They had us meeting with community groups. This took place last January, and there was supposed to be a vote to approve this incinerator. It was kind of a set-up deal. Island Council, 8-1, 8 members against one woman named Margaret Willie, who was bringing us over. 2 weeks after we came back, I got an email, and after the film had been shown and we'd been speaking with the film, and was told that actually the project had been canceled, and instead of the vote taking place in March, there would be an island-wide conference on composting and recycling. I wrote back and said, And it's true, we were happy to have a small part in it. The answer came back and said, no, make no mistake, your film had a huge impact over here. And there were excellent people there who were very knowledgeable about the issue. So it kind of set a different course for the entire island of Hawaii. Now, that's really something from the filmmaking standpoint.
What did you hear from the decision makers? What did they tell you about this film and how it affected them?
What we heard, and it's actually part of the techniques that we do, but as filmmakers, what we heard was that they liked the film, they liked seeing behind the scenes, they liked knowing where things actually went. Mm. Part of my motivation when I started the film is the recycling and compost, is that the lie we can live with? Is this a fiction that they tell us and everything gets tossed away? So what they liked was they liked seeing behind the scenes, and they liked the feeling within the film of people actually holding things and touching things and holding things up and getting their hands involved. And you see behind the scenes with the Recology Company here in San Francisco, a lot of the stuff we throw out, a lot of the stuff we recycle is sorted by hand. So what we do in the home is the beginning, and there's a whole process that goes on beyond that.
Yes, and this kind of brings up another basic point of view of the film, which we tried to appeal to the individual. I know that in most of the times that we give the Q&As after the film, it's important. It seems a very important thing for most people to understand there is actually something they can do about the mess that's out there, because, gosh. Climate control, huge. Water, well, that's our next project. We know how bad that's going to be. What can we do? What can we do to this all this methane in the air? What can we do for all this? And the film is really geared to the smallest things, the easiest things in everybody's everyday life. And we kind of started, you know, with ourselves and like you with Rose, with the idea of, what do I do with it? How do I know? And that's really the genesis of the film, was trying to understand what I can do, what happens, where does it go, the difference between recycling and collection and separation. Because remember, it's those wonderful guys in the trucks that come all day, all night.
Yeah.
They're the collectors. They've got to handle all that junk, right?
Right.
Then when it gets there, as Christopher pointed out, all that crap has to be sorted by hand. I mean, they're up to their eyeballs with this stuff, right? Then once it's sorted, then what happens next? Now we have the recycling, all the things that should happen. So I think the compost issue is really important. Christopher, you started on that in terms of how it gets mixed.
Well, we love our compost. Compost is another rung in the chain of how we deal with our waste. Compost, there's places that I was shocked to be where I found that there weren't compost programs. In fact, actually, in terms of this recycling and the whole issue of it, when I started, I thought, with this film, I thought it was a done deal. Everybody did it. And I thought that it was this way across the United States. And actually, the figures you were quoting, some of those, I'd heard figures like that. But to hear them again, it's shocking. At one point, we were showing the film. We were fortunate to show the film at Google in Washington, D.C. And to walk around the city of Washington, D.C. and see there were no collection cans for even recycling, let alone compost. There were garbage cans on the street, and we saw them heaped up with plastic and aluminum cans, which is just a sin. Not to recycle. That's like, please, can you at least do that? Is that too much to ask? Mm-hmm. And so the thought was, this is the nation's capital. Shouldn't it be the showpiece? Shouldn't it be the place where people learn? And in fact, that city has become the city of San Francisco. This is probably, as far as I know, San Francisco is the leading government entity probably in the world in terms of reduction of material going to garbage dumps, what are called landfills. So in San Francisco, we're in the midst of an incredible experiment. Can we achieve zero waste? The point of the film is actually trying to pose that question for anybody who sees it. Can we achieve zero waste?
And so right now in San Francisco, we're about 78% there?
I think in our film, there's a later figure. We started when we started the film, it was 78, and by the end, we had crept up to 80%.
Oh, wow.
Diversion. Just put that in some context. Cities like Oklahoma City, Indianapolis, and Philadelphia, their diversion rates are like 2%.
2%.
Yeah. There was a county outside. We also showed the film. This is so wonderful for us, where we've been able to show the film in Cleveland. There was a county outside of Cleveland, and the recycling rate was 0.3%. And I was thinking, how do you recycle 0.3%? Is it one individual?
So what explains that? Is it lack of leadership, or why? Because we have so much information now. It seems like there's really no excuse.
That's such a good question. One of the things that we know is to be true, not just in the treatment of waste and so on, but in almost anything that you want to publicize and get done, is if there's leadership. But where does that come from? When Chris talks about Washington, D.C., that is, I might, and I'm sorry, Jerry, but I have to also suggest that Sacramento is not a perfect representation. And it just seems to me that if central major cities start a culture or start as trying to set an example, you know, that you've got something to go on. If there's no example, why should you try? You know, and it's tough. So I think it starts with example. And the second thing, I think, possibly is the fact that, as you said, Rose, that you think about this when you look at your garbage in the morning. So if people could be puzzled and sort of titillated by the subject, they talk about it to
right.
each other.
Right.
This is where else is garbage a conversation at dinner?
It's true. And I love also that you both don't shy away from talking about this throwaway culture that we live in, and the fact that we now have access to so much crap for such a cheap price.
Right.
And even at the natural food stores. I mean, let's be honest. I go to the co-ops, and it's full of so many different products. I always say, how many pasta sauce brands do we really need? And chip bags. And everything is now in these little bags, so you can take one thing to work with you on a daily basis. And it feels like the companies are selling this to us, saying, well, look, you can compost this. Therefore, it's okay to take it or to buy it. And I love that you're both saying, well, wait a minute, we really need to cut back on consumption, because that just doesn't get much attention, you know, in the national or the discussions that we have most of the time about recycling.
Well, you sort of hit on two things there. You know, I like to remind people that your grandmother's soup pot
yeah.
is not still on the stove, something that both Chris and I and Art Ways have talked about this, because we also live, like most people, a busy life. We don't buy the whole foods mostly. You are in a hurry. You don't cook. You may buy something prepared or something easy that's in a bag. Okay. I'm drawing no conclusions. It's a lifestyle. It's a time. It's very hard, I think, for everybody. The second part of this, I think, is that these plastic bags that in which all this prepared food, or any kind of food now, it seems, encases this food, this is a very muddling area. But we are told, no matter what others may say, we're told that there is usually two or three kinds of plastic involved in these bags. It's really hard at the very best level, which you will see, and we'll see a person who has discovered a way of identifying and recycling, really recycling plastic in our film. But it's really hard to separate the kinds of plastic in these bags. So how is that bag then okay for compost? It's not. I don't care what anybody says. It's just not. So I say back to, it's not our position, but I think I'd like another can just for all plastic, just so that could be separated. But that's just coming off the top of my head. Sorry, Chris, I'm sorry, but that sort of, you know, pushes my buttons. Go ahead.
It all pushes my buttons, just to think about this stuff. I mean, And I will say also what Diana said. I like this. It's not like, I don't think either of us are saints. You know, it's not like, and I don't know that there's anybody that really is because you also pass stuff on the street.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You look on the street, and are you supposed to pick up everything? Well, I actually have started picking up more than I would ever have done before. You see the can there. I will say one thing, by the way, about aluminum cans. It's something that comes up. It's not expressly in our film. It was something I learned afterwards. In the United States, we only recycle about half of the aluminum cans that are out there. And there was a study that was that I then read also later that was published by the BBC, and it said if we recycled all the aluminum that's now refined and out there, we would never have to mine aluminum ever again.
Wow.
That includes the mining, that includes the trucking, that includes the electricity to make aluminum. So that some of these things were far ahead of the game, and it's not that, oh, gee, well, what happened to all the aluminum miners? Where did those jobs go? To take that one instance, aluminum mining is not a huge job-producing industry. Recycling and using the resources that we're throwing away is a growing industry, for real. And so there's a whole new economy that can be born, as the people in our film say, that you look at what you look at your TV set, you throw it out, you're done with it. Where does it go? Well, a gentleman in our film has figured out a way to recycle electronics. So instead of this thing being garbage, it becomes, oh, it's a resource. And as he says, his name is James Cow in the film, he said, the iPhone 5 should be able to be made into the iPhone 10. And so this stuff, so it's a whole different way of looking at things. What's happened is largely since World War II, this whole, I participated in it. My mother always said if she could have had another life, she would have been a package designer. And I thought, oh, Mom, please. But it's an edifice that's been constructed, and it can't be unconstructed overnight. So steps are being taken. Our film is one step, shows some steps. There will be more steps. More people will be doing this. More people will figure out how to handle this toxic material that exists in a lot of our electronics. So it's a process. When we were in Hawaii, as I told the story at the beginning, the zero waste manager for the city of San Francisco, Robert Haley, who's a major figure in our film,
right.
Diana had the concept he would be our Gulliver. So we went on a Gulliver's Travels of San Francisco from the high to the low. How is garbage handled? I got to do a digression here. One of my favorite things to film was garbage collection in Chinatown at midnight. That was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But Robert Haley had been on the Big Island of Hawaii 22 years ago and had a contract to be their solid waste manager. It was a contract, and he left. And when he left, he outlined a program of what the Big Island should do. Well, they didn't get with it. But Robert Haley, for the last 20 years, has been working here in the city of San Francisco. So it took San Francisco a long time to reach this 80% diversion. It took a lot of consciousness. It took the government. It took a lot of people.
A combination,
partnership, individuals, citizens, hippies, maybe is where it started, Earth Day, where all these things start. And so it's a process of learning, education, and practice. And you have to ask yourself when you're sitting there late at night, somewhere on, say you're drinking your can of Coca-Cola or your beverage, is anybody going to know what happens when I get rid of it? Is anybody going to see me? And so you do start thinking about these things. And in terms of, as Diana said earlier, these big issues, you know, global warming, energy, a lot of these you can deal with in many ways. This is a direct way that you can start affecting global warming. I'll say one more thing, and then we can move on a little bit. But our film opens with a quotation from a woman named Brenda Platt at the Institute for Self-Reliance. And her statement is that nearly 40% of the greenhouse gases produced by the United States could be eliminated with a zero-waste policy for the United States. And that's really where our film is headed. We would like to see, I'd like to hear the President of the United States in a State of the Union address say that the United States will now pursue a zero-waste policy from now on and let individual communities decide how to do that. But I'd like to hear that as a national policy.
Christopher Beaver directed the documentary Racing to Zero. Diana Fuller produced the documentary. It brings attention to the dilemma of the garbage problem confronting the world today. Again, here in the U.S., just in the U.S., we generate 254 million tons of trash every year. That's almost 4.5 pounds per person per day. So maybe today just be aware of this. What are you throwing away? And I love the line, there really is no away. When you throw things away, it goes somewhere, right? It goes to the landfill. So what questions do you have about trash, about recycling? What can we do to make sure that leaders in other cities try to embrace these policies and implement these programs? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. I want to talk about specifics about plastic again, because I subscribe to the New York Times and the San Francisco Chronicle, and those newspapers every day are delivered wrapped in plastic. And I tweet them and I Facebook them and I say, we're in a drought. We don't need the plastic around the papers. Why do we get this plastic every day? Now, luckily, Cole Hardware and other places take the plastic to recycle it. What happens when you give the paper from the newspapers to a place like Cole Hardware?
The plastic.
The plastic. Yeah, the plastic.
Very good question you ask.
Very good question, which frankly really stumps me, because I didn't know that Cole Hardware took back the plastic covers.
Yep.
But I would have to assume that is, that would go into, it would still be a pickup. The Recology has the contract for San Francisco, and it's for three bins. Waste Management had the contract for the landfill located in Altamont. They had the contract, which is now running out. What subsequently is going to happen, there's been a lot of coverage on this, and I think Waste Management is suggesting that because San Francisco would have to go 20 more miles than Altamont and Waste Management to their landfill, that it's a much better idea to renegotiate the contract. Well, there's a lot behind that which I don't know about. All I can tell you is the difference, and I would beg everyone to pay attention to this because it will come up. The difference is, for 20 miles, think of it, okay, the difference is we are trying to cut down the amount of trash. We are basing this whole thing, our lives, the rest of you, what we do, our film is just a teeny bit of this. But we're basing all this on understanding that we've got to keep away from Mad Max and use less and waste nothing, okay? The other thing is, remember that in landfills, like, which is the singular job of a company like Waste Management, they depend on volume, only volume. The more volume, the better. Land, garden tailings, bits of branches, wrong, 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 but that's what swells volume. So you can see that one thing is in direct opposition to the other, and I say that we should try to cut down as far. You can cut down twice what that extra 20 miles of driving would be if you stop wasting.
Well, and this Saturday, when you mentioned picking up trash off the streets, is Coastal Cleanup Day on beaches around the world. And so many people get involved in this. You can go to coastal.ca.gov. I went to Ocean Beach a couple days ago and was just horrified to see so much trash on the beach.
Still.
Mm-hmm. Plastic, yeah.
Everything. Styrofoam,
well,
even.
We got into the film, I was very curious about plastic. I read a book about plastic, and it pointed out that the Titanic, that why are there no plastic artifacts that have been brought up from the Titanic? Has the ocean destroyed them? And the answer is, there was no plastic in the Titanic.
Post-World War II.
1912, it went down. So there is no plastic. It's all a new invention. And there are positive things one can say about it. It's like a devil's bargain that we've kind of gotten into. It's lighter. It's less breakable. And yet we've also then abused that by just this entire proliferation, say, of bottled water. You know, more, and it's convenient. It's handy. I drink some of it. I'm not, you know, some people need to rely on water from outside sources, but
hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. We've got full lines. We'll take calls right after the break. Today, we're talking about the new documentary that looks at solutions to the global problem of waste. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Hi, I'm Matt Martin, General Manager of KALW, here with Laura Flynn, producer of Your Call, taking a moment during this conversation on what we're trying to make our last day in our September membership campaign to ask for your support. It's very simple. You make a call, 800-525-9917, or you go to kalw.org.
We have a copy of the DVD, Racing to Zero. It's yours for a donation of $120. Just call 1-800-525-9917 or go to kalw.org.
This is a really fascinating documentary talking about San Francisco's efforts to reduce the amount that we put into the waste stream. We've got full lines right now here in the studio. People who want to take part in this conversation, we're asking you to fill the lines on the other side of the studio. And that's where our phone room volunteers are, 800-525-9917. Join Bonnie Evanson in San Francisco, Jean Lieber in Berkeley, Eve Lynch in San Francisco, Ira Johnson, also from the city, who've just gone online to KALW.org to give their support. This morning, matter of fact, just in the past hour, we've had people give $50, we've had people give $120, we had a $500 gift just recently. At every level of support, you make a difference. But on this last day, we're trying to get it done today. You can help us make it there, but it involves one person at a time making the call or click. We've got the DVD, Racing to Zero, yours for a $120 contribution. But regardless of whether you want that, if you want the conversation to continue, you want the information to remain unfettered, local, and independent, this is where you make it happen. Support your call. Support KALW, 800-525-9917. We won't be asking for your support again until May of 2016. So we need you today to give your support to KALW so we can say we ended this campaign strong. 800-525-9917. Thank you for that call there. Be the next person to join in. We thank you so much for your support.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about the new documentary, Racing to Zero, which presents solutions to the global problem of waste and takes a look at how San Francisco plans to get to zero waste by 2020, and also introduces you to the amazing people behind the scenes who do this work sometimes in the middle of the night to make sure that we are recycling all the stuff that is thrown away in the city. And I'm joined by Christopher Beaver, director of Racing to Zero. Diana Fuller is producer of Racing to Zero. And we already have full lines. I love that people care so much about this issue. 866-798-8255. We have one line open. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. So we were talking about the fact that San Francisco is pretty much the leader in the world. And it's really pathetic in many cities across the country. So Mike has a question. What is the cost of building the infrastructure for a recycling and composting plant in a new city?
This is not a question. That's a question you should address to Mike San Giacomo, who is the director of ecology, and how he has proceeded. All we know here is that leadership again comes into it. So in San Francisco is very small, growing fast, you know that.
Right.
But still small. We do know that it took a combination of three bodies working together to create what's going on here. Now, another thing, when we came in, we didn't know that everybody didn't have a Department of the Environment. And then we found out everybody doesn't have a Department of the Environment. So the Department of the Environment has really been, I think, with according to Haley, taken a leadership position in, I think, in collaborating and cooperating with the garbage company and the city itself, so that you have three entities that are driving towards the same end. I think that's very important. I don't know. I don't quite see how bigger cities are so divided up that there's no central, I want to say governing force. I don't mean that. There's no central responsible place. Hmm. Can you address that?
Well, one of the things I would say, that I think that's a very good question that was posed. It's, in a way, it's a little bit like saying how much does a new car cost,
yep,
or how much does a house cost, because it depends on the facility, depends on the city. One of the things actually I would encourage people to do, and Diana touched on it, Robert Haley is the zero waste manager for the city of San Francisco in the Department of the Environment. And I don't want to heap a lot of things on his desk because he's a very busy person. But people can contact the Department of the Environment here in San Francisco to get information about this. How do you bring it to your area? It's a really good question. Mm-hmm. So I remember at one point talking to Robert Haley about this and said, well, what if I don't have composting in my town? What should I do? And he said, well, you better get active, hadn't you? You'd better talk to your city council. You'd better talk to the Board of Supervisors. So there's a certain amount of activism that can also go along with what we're talking about. You can get in touch with people. I do eat chips. I'm a sucker for chips. People say when I've gone camping, they say they expect me to have freeze-dried tortilla chips.
You know what? You can buy them in bulk.
and I probably would, and I'd probably get as big as the studio as that either way. But The point is that part of the responsibility, I think, of doing some of these things is that you need to follow through and get in touch with the companies that make them. The other entity here, of course, is Recology, who has the contract for collection in the city of San Francisco. And people should feel free to call them. You know, they're accessible people, and the calls make them more accessible.
So also to make it a little more complex, what's recyclable here might not be recyclable in Santa Cruz, which might not be recyclable in Alameda County.
Unfortunately, that is a problem.
Right.
I think that is also in one scene of a public event in our film, one of the, what's the name of the kids that are the collectors, the collecting group that was at the...
The Wastebusters.
The Wastebusters. Malaika of the Wastebusters says, you know, it's really hard to know where to put what when all of the definitions of what change in every county and community. So when there's a public event, people are coming from all over, and what you can put here, do here in San Francisco is maybe not what you could do in another part of the world. I have to, just one thing I have to say, Rose. Actually, I think the leading recyclers to date in the world, as far as we know, I think are the Nordic countries and Germany. Germany has a fantastic system
But they incinerate.
That's the problem.
They incinerate.
That's the only problem, really.
Yeah.
They do everything right except because of country size and the rest of it, they incinerate. So I just did want to correct it because nobody's perfect, but we're trying.
Right. And I wanted to correct that they incinerate. So it's typical. And that's actually this kind of back and forth you hear is a lot of the discussion that we did to go through it. One of the things that Diana insisted when we made the film was to keep going, and people would say, well, there's no way you can recycle X. And she'd say, there must be. And so she would do research, and she would dig into this to find what are the outer fringes, the outer limits of recycling, what's possible. That led us to electronics, James Cowell, Green Citizen. That led us to a gentleman named Mike Biddle, who has developed a factory-level a system of recycling hard plastic.
And I want to give a shout out to Green Citizen.
Oh,
I loved this scene in your film. So the founder, James Cowell,
K-A-O.
He saw a documentary about all of this electronic waste being exported to China, which is ruining
India,
which is ruining the lives of villagers, poor people who've done nothing. They didn't want this stuff, but it's just shipped over there. So he started Green Citizen. And after your film, I went to Green Citizen. It's on Mission in San Francisco. An amazing setup. If you have any electronic stuff that you don't need anymore, a wire, a plug, anything, you can bring it to Green Citizen.
Or telephone him and find out if it's they, you know, what to do with it.
Right.
I might also add, Rose, that James Cowell was 20 years in the technology world, right? He was a venture capitalist. This, as you said, he was inspired. I think that's so inspiring about James. Mm-hmm. But he also now, I believe, has 20 different offices. He has spread the hub where these things are transformed, the collectibles are transformed, is one thing. But he now has been able to spread this to many other different counties. And I would love to see him go. I wish we could help get his structure nationally recognized and copied because it is important.
Diana Fuller is producer of the documentary Racing to Zero. Christopher Beaver directed Racing to Zero. And let's hear from Dayamudra in San Francisco. Hi, Dayamudra. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for this show. It's very inspiring to hear that San Francisco is leading with recycling and composting. I know that a lot of us really care about that and we'd like to work. But I think there's a bit of a contradiction because we're also in San Francisco near the leading edge in technology. And you're touching on e-waste, but in terms of the cradle to grave, just in terms of what we consume on the cradle end, you know, we're all replacing our iPhones, the iPhone 5, the iPhone 6, replacing our computers. These electronics are built to be obsolete within 1, 2, 3 years. So it's great that we're composting, recycling, biking, but if you don't upgrade your phone in a couple years, you really can't use it. If you don't upgrade your computer, you can't use it. And so I think that San Francisco could also be the leader on really creating solutions to use things longer, fix them. He had talked about the iPhone 5 could become the iPhone 10. So I think there could be a lot more creativity in creating less waste on the consumer end, especially in terms of electronics.
There's also something, I'm just going to zip this right in, called industrial irresponsibility.
Mm.
And we have certainly not solved that or even tried to go too deeply into it in our film, because it takes the pressure of more people behind an issue like this to make anything work.
Well, we live at a time when the onus is on us now, right? It's like, consumer, citizen, take charge. You can do this. Well, what about the responsibility of the corporations that are putting out these products and then wrapping them in a ton of plastic?
Well, I think that's right. I know that San Francisco has been trying to be active in that direction, and it's very hard to get the companies to sit down. Some of the ones that Apple is not a very good company in terms of the recyclability of their products. I love Apple. I love the stuff, but they're not. Trader Joe's, that we love to go to Trader Joe's, and you take a look, and I would just say the next time you're in Trader Joe's, someone take a look at their Mediterranean lunch package, and just it's layers and layers of plastic. So there's that is one of the next waves. You were talking earlier about going to the, you know, natural food store, and you see the shelves, and you can go to Rainbow. We wanted to go to Rainbow, walk down the shelves with Robert Haley and say, what do you think of this packaging? What do you think of the makeup packaging? What do you think of this? Toothpaste is the one that I think about. You know, does every toothpaste tube have to come in its own little box? And so one of the things that I'm curious about would be the supermarket of the future. And I know that even if we go back to Apple, they have this great reputation for design, Jonathan Ivey. And it's wonderful. And you have all these designers designing new apps for us every day. We see new apps. And you just wish that there was some place that we could say, in this area, they're working on the prototype supermarket of tomorrow.
I just read about a supermarket in Berlin, Germany. It's a supermarket with zero packaging.
Wow.
The first one ever.
Wow.
Wow, that's true. We should look that up.
Yeah.
Get a ticket. We're on our way.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dimudra. So basically, it's pressuring the company.
It is, and I think it has to be real pressure. I think they really have to be, and they're not deaf to it. I don't think that they're deaf to it. In our film, actually, there is an example of producer responsibility toward the end in the field of compost, and it's a company called General Foods, General Mills, the Valley of the Jolly Green Giant, Yoplait Yogurt. And it's kind of amazing to me as a child of the 60s to be saying, okay, here's a corporation that's trying to do something. They purchased the organic spaghetti sauce company, Muir Glen. But in Williams, California, which is north of here, they have most of the processed tomatoes consumed in the United States come from a couple of small areas in California. So 95%, in fact. And what the company has done, General Foods, got in touch with the gentleman in our film.
Robert Schaefer.
Robert Schaefer. Thank you, Diana, who is a compost maven, guru, expert, and ask him what could
they... Soil consultant.
A soil consultant. What could they do? Could they improve their operation? And the division within General Mills, General Foods, that's working on this, wants to have compost, full compost, for all their fields instead of throwing out the leftovers after a harvest. They would like all of the products to be organic. They are supporting bee restoration projects, and they also would like wildlife refuges scattered among their fields for biodiversity. And I asked one of the people if this was a lie. You know, is this a bunch of crap you're handing me? And the guy's mouth fell open. He was like, look what you're saying. Look at the words you're using. And he said, no, we would like to achieve this. And he said, we intend to try to achieve this. That's an example of corporate responsibility. Mm-hmm. Some of it is actually can produce profit for those companies. Recycling, taking material back. Another one, I'll mention just one more, an interesting company, Eileen Fisher, very high-end clothing. Eileen Fisher is very involved with an effort to have organic cotton produced in the Central Valley of California, and she will take back any garment that's brought back to her, and she will recycle that garment. She will reuse the material. So again, it's a very high end, but you have to admire somebody who's setting that and saying, I will do that.
Patagonia did that recently too, and said, if your zipper's broken, don't buy another jacket, bring it in. We want you to keep it for years and years.
It's great.
Well, thank you for calling in. Let's go next to Ruthann and El Cerrito. Hi, Ruthann. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi there. I had heard that an enormous amount of waste in the world contributing to greenhouse gases is from food waste. And I'm thinking not so much, you know, when I throw out an apple core or a banana peel, but much more that, like, restaurants and supermarkets and huge, like, industrial size food waste. Is there anything being done so that those companies, organizations, outlets do more responsible disposing of their food or recycling or whatever you want to call it?
I cannot give you percentages, actually, on your question, but I would like to say, and thank you for asking that, I would like to say, in our knowledge, there is something is being done, and it starts with the restaurant, the producer, making an agreement with the collecting company and being sure that that company that collects is one that provides, that uses compost, that can transfer the food or the organic materials into compost. We do know that many restaurants have this thing going in San Francisco. Actually, there is one in Chinatown that we use as an example for your question, that has been very successfully doing this and has a 95% recycling average. I don't know about other parts of the country. I rather think that this is happening. From what we can gather, this is happening in a small way in a lot of different cities. But as I said in the beginning, I really cannot tell you where. Berkeley, by the way, Berkeley would have this going because they're very keen on focusing on organic, the treatment of organic food and so on. But I cannot tell you for the rest of the country. I am sure, actually, that this is in process, but probably not on a big scale.
Diana Fuller is producer of the documentary Racing to Zero. Christopher Beaver is director of the documentary. It presents solutions to the global problem of waste and also shines a light on San Francisco, which has a goal of being zero waste by the year 2020. And thank you, Ruth Ann. Let's go next to Max in Berkeley. Hi, Max. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call and for an excellent program. It's amazing to hear what San Francisco is doing. Three cheers for San Francisco. Within 10 years, we'll have the problem lit, so to speak. But I'm wondering, have you looked at practices in other parts of the world? Is the rest of the world getting wise to this idea of recycling to such an extent? And something that comes to mind very specifically is the situation in Haiti, for instance. There's been a massive influx of people from the countryside to Port-au-Prince, the capital. And when I grew up there 50-plus years ago, we had 250,000 people. Now we have 3 million people. And there's been a massive problem generated as a result of the management of waste in Haiti. Mm-hmm. And the one factor in all of this that's very very complex, it has to do with the use of plastic bottles. They flooded the country, by the way. The waterfront in Port-au-Prince has turned into a huge mess. And I know that in some countries they've relied on the burning of the waste. In France, incineration. In Germany. But also I hear that in Germany they are looking seriously into the construction, the manufacturing of cars, so that there is complete recycling of the raw material going into that. Would you please answer that for me? Thank you very much for an excellent program.
Thank you, Max.
The statement there about the situation in Haiti is so upsetting. Mm. There's one example. Okay, so yes, recycling rates vary around the world. One of the things that's also interesting, when you look at global recycling rates, sometimes you look at Africa, the recycling rates seem to be very low. It's because there's so much reuse. So when we measure recycling rates and we compare countries and societies, they have to be taken in context. So, yeah, Robert Haley told me the story when he first came to Chinatown. He was going to be in charge of, when he first started working for the city of San Francisco, he was in charge of recycling in Chinatown to encourage people to recycle. And he couldn't figure out why they couldn't get enough recycling going. It was because everyone was recycling. They were reusing and recycling. It was part of the culture. Mm. It was part of what you do.
This is the organic material primarily that we're talking about.
But we've also seen in countries like India, again, Robert Haley had the opportunity to travel there and said in the old days you'd travel on a train and you would order your lunch and they would bring it to you on a banana leaf. And when you were done, you threw it out the window. So that was compostable. That would, and cows and so forth could eat that. Microbes could eat that. It could go back into the plants. He was there a second time, and it was all served on styrofoam plates. So there's this pressure, manufacturing pressure, to produce this material. So it's kind of a back and forth. It's a pressure to have a throwaway society, a convenient society, and a pressure to be a more stabilized society. So I remember there was a story that Mike San Giacomo told me, who is the head of ecology, and he's Italian. His grandmother came from Italy. We brought her over and said when she arrived here, they had paper towels, and she would carefully wash them and hang them on the line. And he said, Ma, what are you doing? And she's, you know, because you don't waste. So one of the things that we've talked about many, many times, it's even using this term waste. And the thing that we've found, the single thing that transforms this is when you stop thinking about waste and you start thinking resource. Hmm. And that one, that would be the one slogan you could say. It's not waste, it's not resource. Or as our wonderful and brilliant editor, Maureen Gosling, put it, people may know her, she's worked with Les Blank a lot, said that you'll never look at your garbage the same way again.
Mm-hmm. True. Well, thank you for calling in, Max. We've got a bunch of emails. I want to read a few. Leslie writes, we've heard about reduce, reuse, recycle, but what happened to repair? If things are repaired, they won't go to the landfill. It's hard to find parts for anything to repair. So many things are not repairable because they're made with plastic. We need more places like Phil's Electric Appliance Repair Shop, philselectric.com. Thank you for that, Leslie. John writes in, while I sometimes feel guilty telling people how little waste I generate, because I don't want to seem like I'm bragging, but I do tell people to give people an idea of how little waste I produce. I recycle and compost. When I purchase things with non-recyclable packaging, I generate more trash, but that's an exception. This requires a bit of a lifestyle change. This lifestyle change also has health benefits. That's right. Thank you, John. And Leah writes in, there's got to be a way to drop a prescription bottle in an alcohol bath to sterilize it so you can refill it. It appalls me how many plastic bottles are produced for medications. Another part about your film, Racing to Zero, that I loved, focused on the medicine in San Francisco. Yep. This is an amazing number. 9 months of running a medicine bin disposal in San Francisco, okay, 9 months, they collected six tons of medicines. 6 tons of pills.
And plastic bottles.
That's amazing.
You're supposed to take the pills out of the plastic bottles. The plastic bottles are recyclable. And yet this is one of the places, if you follow the recycling, as James Cowell says in our film, he's the electronics man, has electronics recycling, everything in the world can be recycled. It's a question of the cost.
Yeah, thank you.
And the benefit. And so this is a really good question. But the plastic from pill containers, at this point, should be recycled, the medicines removed, and there are collection bins in San Francisco, and it's an innovative program here. Again, comes through the Department of the Energy, and they have people who deal with this specifically. So again, San Francisco is taking steps and inventing. It's happening everywhere. This whole field is developing so quickly, it's hard to even keep a handle on it. And our goal remains, the basic goal that we have is a zero-waste national policy. I've also said we've had showings at Facebook in Silicon Valley of the film. We had a showing at Google in Washington, D.C. And I personally would like to see both companies declare themselves as zero-waste companies.
That would be very helpful.
We have an email or a call, Priscilla. We don't have time, Priscilla, but thanks for calling. She says, Apple has a good recycling program. There are companies where you're able to send your products back in to be recycled.
Yeah, they're getting better. It's just that it's known, and I think they are getting better because of the awareness. Even if I sit here and say, look, Apple is not good at this, that's not where they want to be coming from. I'm certain of that. Even if you go back to Steve Jobs and we hear about his whole background with Zen Buddhism and a place in the world and how we relate to the world, that it's clear that that's not where you want to be. But it's a process, and you have to make a dedication to it. You can't just say, dream it'll happen. That's magical thinking.
I'm just going to add one little tiny thing here, and that is, you know, the thing that helped us, not that it makes, as I said, anything perfect, was the fact that we've been told over and over again by the experts that we have interviewed or have traveled with in our film, and that is, think in terms of the closed loop. Think in terms of the circle. I mean, the circle really is the basis of everything, that formula, if you wish, and everything does follow that. If it doesn't, like the structure of a company, yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, that's all right?
No, you're good. We're just almost out of time, but I want to...
But think of circle and closed loop, because that really could be, it's like how you live.
Right, and it's a good visual. And we will definitely revisit this. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of your emails and phone calls. Diana Fuller produced Racing to Zero. Christopher Beaver directed Racing to Zero. Thank you for your important work on this issue.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.